If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Bubbling Adventure, a podcast all about kids and how positive education and conscious parenting can impact their entire life as well as society. I am your host, Julie, and each Thursday we are having conversations with guests on different themes, and our aim is to have open discussions, share different points of view, and learn in a non-judgmental way. Today's special guest is Jenny Lisk, a podcaster and author of the book Future Widow, to tell us about becoming a single parent. This episode is very helpful as Jenny tells us about preparation to grief, also known as anticipatory grief. Through explaining her story, we also learn about grief allies and the importance of support, processing and coping mechanism, and how being honest with kids is very important in these difficult times. As always, thank you so much for listening. You can also write a review if you're listening from Apple Podcasts. Click on the 5-star button on Spotify and join us on Instagram at The Bubbling Adventure for daily positive education content. But without further ado, let's begin.
Faisant cette chanson.
Maman, papa. Hi, Jenny. How are you today?
Hi, Julie. I'm great. How are you?
Very good. Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for having me.
Of course. Could you please introduce yourself for the audience?
Sure. Yeah. Let's see where to begin. My name is Jenny Lisk and I live in Seattle, Washington in the United States. So there's the most basic information. I am a podcaster. I'm an author. And specifically, I help widowed parents. So my podcast is called The Widowed Parent Podcast. My book is called Future Widow. And how I got into this is it's a long story. I'll give you the short version and then we can go wherever you want with it. But it was, 7 years ago right now. So in the spring of 2015, my husband, Dennis, we'd been married for like 16 years at that point, and our kids were 8 and 10, and he started feeling a little bit dizzy. Just, you know, not a big deal, right? A little dizzy. I mean, I could be dehydrated. I don't know. Sometimes people are dizzy. And I had no idea it would turn out to be terminal brain cancer. Wow. It was the craziest thing. It was like, he'd been feeling a little dizzy. We talked about seeing his doctor. We made an appointment. He made an appointment with his primary care doctor. But the really weird thing while we were waiting for that appointment was he started exhibiting some signs of confusion, like cognitive, but just weird. Like he was mostly fine, mostly normal. But then he would like not quite understand something. And then I'm thinking, am I second guessing myself, right? Am I overreacting? Am I reading too much into the situation? Because then he'd be fine. Anyway, we go to the doctor and the doctor says, let's get an MRI of your brain. And we were expecting to, you know, have the MRI be sent away. They'd call us in a couple of days. Well, after the MRI, the tech said, why don't you go back upstairs to the doctor's office? Actually, he wants to see you now. And, you know, so like, okay, well, this is not a good thing, right? That's not how they, I don't know how they do things where you are, but where I am, that's not how they usually
it's
do
similar.
Things.
Yeah. It's not a good sign usually.
Right. And so we go back up to the doctor's office and he says, well, there's something really wrong with your brain. I don't want to scare you, but I think you should know what you might be dealing with. It might be glioblastoma. Meanwhile, I'm like, glioblastoma? I've never heard of that. What's glioblastoma, right? Well, it turns out it's a very aggressive form of brain cancer with a survival rate in the single digits. And so anyway, you might have glioblastoma. You need to go see the neurosurgeon tomorrow. And we go to the neurosurgeon and he says, yeah, we need to do brain surgery the following day. So this is like all of a sudden we went from life was normal, life was good, life was fine, to you're having brain surgery. And at that point, all we knew was it was a tumor, right? It could have been cancerous, not cancerous. Some tumors are more easily dealt with than others. Well, it was the worst case and it was this very aggressive, very fast brain cancer. So he lived for 8 months. And so that was a time of caregiving for me. We had hospice at the end. We had all these emergency room visits and surgeries and all these things. And I also became, in effect, a single parent immediately. He was still alive, but especially, you know, I mentioned that he had some cognitive confusion in the beginning. Well, after his first surgery, he was never the same cognitively. He was confused. And, you know, he like wouldn't remember that he was sick. Or maybe would remember he had some type of cancer, but didn't remember what type it was, didn't remember that he was dying. Even though, you know, he had been in all the meetings with the doctors where they told us all the information, but he kept forgetting. So I was in this period where I'm like, okay, I'm taking care of him. I'm taking care of my two kids. I had a ton of help, friends, family, colleagues. But how do I parent these kids knowing what's coming, right?
Yeah.
And so it was 8 months like that. And then he died. And then I was like, okay, now I'm 100% a single parent, widowed parent. How do I parent grieving kids? I didn't sign up for this, right? Like I so far for 11 years, I've been up there, you know, by the time he died, there were 9 and 11. So for 11 years, I've been a regular parent with regular kid issues. And now all of a sudden I'm like, I'm not a grief expert. I'm not a parenting expert. I'm not like, how do I do this? Right. So I ended up deciding that I should start a podcast and go out and ask people and interview people and say, how do we do this? Because I can't be the only one, right? Like, there must be a lot of other widowed parents like me who are also wondering what to do, what to know, what to, not even knowing what they don't know. So why don't I go out and interview people and, you know, learn myself and stand in the place of my listeners in the interviews and ask questions on their behalf and share it out in the form of a podcast. And that's how it all got started. And that was coming up on 4 years ago that the podcast started.
So it still took you 3 years then to begin the podcast, right?
Well, let's see. He died in January of 2016. And I started it in November of 2018. So about 2.5, close to 3 years. And November, the reason November is it's Children's Grief Awareness Month. And so I realized, you know, when I was trying to get this started that I should, you know, make sure I started it in November to try to get some of that extra focus on it, you know, that kind of month would bring.
And so the 2 years, 2 years and a half before, how were you coping with everything? Because obviously then you try to ask for support to a wider group and audience. But before, was it mainly your family and friends, or whether, you know, like some groups or?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. It's interesting because I was all of a sudden in two new situations. There was myself as a grieving person, as a widowed person, as someone who's lost their spouse of 17 years by that point. And then there's myself as a parent of grieving children. And the interesting thing is, even though the three of us all lost the same person, his name was Dennis, we lost a very different relationship. I lost a spouse, they lost a parent. And I don't know what it's like to lose a parent as a 9-year-old or an 11-year-old, or even now, because both my parents are still alive, right? And so it's an interesting when you realize that even though we all lost the same person, we all have a very different experience of that loss. And so for myself, I found a therapist that I loved, that I can't tell you how many hours I spent sitting in her office talking to her. I'm the kind of person who goes and looks for books So I went to Amazon, you know, typed in like, where's the book, and read everything I could find there. There's also, there's something called Camp Widow, which is, it's not camping. It sounds like it might be, but it's not. It's run by an organization called Soaring Spirits, and they are US based, but they're starting to do work other places, including quite a bit in Australia. I don't know if they're doing anything in the UK, but they
check it out and leave the link as well, because a lot of people are also from Australia who listen and
yeah,
and so on. So.
Yeah. And they, well, so they run Camp Widow in the US about three, well, actually one in Toronto and one in Florida and one in San Diego. They've been doing that three times a year for a while now, and they've added something in Australia coming up this year. But basically it's a conference, for lack of a better word. It's at a fancy hotel, you know, and with speakers and workshops, but also a lot of connection, and there's fun too. They plan like a, you know, a Saturday evening dance party, and everybody there's widowed. And it's just like, you know, let's get together with people who get it. And whether we're talking about grief or not talking about grief, everybody kind of is, kind of gets it. And so it's a very supportive environment. So I found things like that for myself. You know, and regarding supporting the kids, I mean, I tried to read things. I tried to talk to some friends who were widowed, who had kids. It turns out I'm a little bit unusual in that I have quite a few friends who live close by, who are widowed with kids in grade school, high school. Now some of them are college age because they've grown, you know, over the years. But I found out when I went to Camp Widow that actually most widowed parents don't know anybody else in their kids' school community or in their neighborhood or their social circles who's widowed with a kid in grade school or high school or a young child, and feel very isolated and very alone. And that's one of, I think, the important things about connecting, whether it's through something like Camp Widow, whether it's through, there are other grief centers, actually in, I could give you a link. In the US, there's a National Alliance for Children's Grief, which is an organization of all these grief centers in many, many communities all across the country. And I don't know that they link to any in other countries outside the US. I think a few in Canada, but there is some kind of a similar Canadian group. I know there's a lot of work going on. Yeah, there's a lot of work going on in the UK as well. I just don't know if there's like one link to send you for that. But there's a lot of good work going on. And one of the reasons that I started the podcast is I wanted to help get the word out, right? Like I didn't know about all this stuff going on, and it's a little bit fragmented, right? There's a group here doing excellent work. There's a group here doing excellent work. There's a group here doing excellent work. But unless you happen to know about them, you know, any particular family might be struggling there looking for resources, right? And not knowing that there's something going on. In fact, it's interesting. I heard from a listener in Atlanta, Georgia. I interviewed somebody at Kate's Club, which is a very large, very well-regarded organization in Atlanta that serves a lot of grieving kids, and they have for some years now. And I interviewed them about, you know, this topic, and also shared a little bit about their program so that if anybody was in Atlanta, they could call them up. So I heard from a listener who wrote to me and said, "Oh my gosh, I live in Atlanta. I didn't realize that I was driving past Kate's Club every single day when I was dropping my kids off at school. I didn't even know they existed. I hadn't seen them, but I learned about them from you in Seattle on your podcast. And now I'm going to call them up and, you know, connect with their programs." So that's kind of some of the stuff I'm trying to do is, you know, is raise awareness of some of those resources that do exist, because there are people doing excellent work. They can really be helpful.
Yeah, and it makes such a big difference. That's good that she also took the time to write that feedback to you, because it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've sort of struck up an email correspondence from time to time now, which is nice too.
Yes, because I guess that obviously in the beginning, the family is a lot of help, although a lot of them are also grieving, right? So it must be tough for everyone. And yeah.
So this is reminding me about what I call grief allies. So we did have a lot of support. Mm-hmm. While my husband was sick and after he died. And I think it's really important for people to understand how they can help the grieving people in their life, or the people in a, you know, terminal illness situation like we were. And it's interesting because I had never been on this side of the equation before, right? And I'm sure I've messed up lots of things, like not knowing what to say to somebody. And so not saying anything at all, because you don't want to say the wrong thing, right? Mm. And being on this side of the equation, it was interesting because I could see, you can see who feels comfortable reaching out, who feels comfortable just being there and being supportive, who you know, is struggling with what to say, and how, like, you see the kind of variety of responses. And one of the things I learned from it is that it is important to say something. And it almost doesn't matter what you say, as long as what you're saying is basically, I'm here and I care and I'm not going to run away because this is weird and awkward and hard. As long as kind of that's what you're saying, it's all good. I mean, because, and I think the reason people struggle with what to say or how to support somebody is they really want to, like, fix the problem, right? And I've had this problem, right? If I could only decide the magic words that I can write in this condolence card to fix this problem, you know, I can't think of the magic words that are going to help. So maybe I'll put it off a little while longer and maybe I'll think of the magic words. Well, of course, it's an impossible task. There's no magic words, right? So as long as I think I have to find the perfect words, I'm going to keep putting it off. And then I'm never going to send the card because I'm going to be like, oh my God, I can't send the card. It's too late now. I'm embarrassed to send the card, right? And it's not just about cards. It's about reaching out in other way, any way that you want to reach out, right? But what I learned is that, you know, if you just accept the fact that there are no magic words that fix the actual problem, nothing that anybody said or did could erase my husband's terminal condition. So if you set that aside and you say, what I can do is, you know, be there, but also what I can do is fix practical problems. Like if I need dinner, you know, delivered to the house, yeah, because I'm in the hospital running around doing stuff, somebody could fix that problem for me. They could drop off dinner. They could send me a pizza, right? If my kid needs to get to soccer practice every Monday and Wednesday, somebody can fix that problem. They can set up a carpool, right? If the lawn needs mowing and I don't have time to do it, or the dogs need walking and I don't have time to do it, or maybe I just don't have the energy to do it, somebody can fix all those problems. And so I've realized that, you know, giving yourself permission to say, I can't fix the underlying problem, so I don't need to even bother trying, but I can fix the logistical problems, which then, you know, that takes something off my plate, which then lets me either have time to grieve or have time to deal with hospitals and doctors and other stuff or whatever it is. I think it's an important lesson that I learned and something that I've been trying to share with grief allies, because I think, especially now in the pandemic, right, more people know people who are grieving. Mm-hmm. And it's on more people's minds now. And people want to know how they can support their colleagues, their neighbors, their friends.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Yeah, this is very valuable advice, and you're completely right. I think sometimes people are too awkward and they're so afraid of saying the wrong thing or making things worse, or yeah, so it's just you're a bit paralyzed and you don't take action. So it's really good to hear that, and I hope it will be useful for many people.
Yeah,
and you said that when your husband was sick, you were trying to prepare yourself, like obviously as a grieving wife and with your kids. What type of preparation can you do at this stage?
So that's interesting. There's a concept known as anticipatory grief, which is kind of a clinical word. And it's like anticipatory grief. What is that? Right. Mm-hmm. And well, it turns out it's like when somebody is going to be dying and you kind of start grieving ahead of time. Now, does that make it easier, harder? No, not necessarily, right? But it's just, it is a thing, and it is a different experience than someone who dies suddenly of a surprise cause of death. And so for me, I actually started, like, I knew that this brain cancer was going to be terminal, even though there was a very tiny percentage chance that, you know, some people survive it. I just knew, based on the number of complications and his level of confusion and the growth of the tumor and these things, that he wasn't going to be one of the small percentage of lucky people. Mm. So even though we did the treatments and things, you know, they didn't help. And I actually started writing specifically on Caring Bridge, which is a online journal, basically blog. It's a blog for people, you know, for grief and difficult situations. Sometimes somebody will go into the hospital and someone will start a Caring Bridge, for example. It's a way to keep friends and family and loved ones updated on what's going on with the situation. And so mm-hmm. when my husband had his first surgery, my sister actually said, why don't you start a Caring Bridge to keep people updated? And I said, no, I don't want to do that. I will just send some texts, send some emails, keep people updated. Well, it pretty quickly became obvious that wasn't going to be feasible. And, you know, we were lucky to have a lot of people who wanted to follow along and be supportive. And so she started the Caring Bridge, and then I quickly took it over, being the one doing all the posting. And it's interesting because it started out very matter of fact, like reporting on status. He had surgery, he's out, he's eating, send a card, whatever, basic kind of stuff. But over time, it started to become a vehicle for me to start reflecting and kind of processing as we went through it, through this experience. And I found myself, you know, stealing little moments. If I had to drive to the hospital and I had 20 minutes by myself in the car to drive across the bridge into downtown, I would be thinking, and like turning over in my head, what do I want to post next? What do I want to share with all these wonderful people who are following along? And that kind of thinking about what to write and what to share was, you know, in hindsight, it was helping me start to process the experience and start to think about things that, you know, maybe I wouldn't have been thinking about if I didn't decide that I was going to be writing and sharing. So I think that's one of the things that helped me as we went along. And it was also interesting because he was so confused. There was only one chance, and it was very brief, for the two of us to talk about the experience, about what was coming. Mm. It wasn't like, so, you know, sometimes if somebody has a terminal diagnosis, then there's time for like a bucket list type activities, you know, we're going to do these things, we're going to have these discussions. But in this case, there was none of that. I mean, there was no traveling for one thing, because we were constantly dealing with medical emergencies and medical treatments. And then there was no, like, let's have all these meaningful discussions, because he didn't ever remember that he, you know, that he was dying. And so it would have, been pointless for the most part for me to, you know, if he's sitting there having some lunch and watching television because he's bedridden, why would I bring up, let's talk about how sad we are that you're going to die.
Yeah.
And when, especially when that would just be like terrible for that time. And then, you know, an hour later, he'd for 15 minutes later, he'd forget again anyway. Like, why would I keep bringing that up? You know? So that was, I didn't have that as a, you know, talking with him was not available to me as a processing or coping mechanism.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's really tough. And then obviously you had to prepare your kids, and I'm sure they had a lot of questions and fears. And how do you deal with that? And I guess they're not too young. I mean, it's way too young, but you see what I mean? Like, to understand death.
It's not like they were infants or something.
I wonder how you can explain such a thing to.
Yeah. Well, the important thing that I've learned is how important it is to be honest with kids about difficult situations, including death and including, you know, cause of death, and about the situation. And I, you know, it's interesting. When he first was sick, you know, we only knew it was a tumor. And then when we found out that it was cancer and that, you know, and it was terminal, my friend called me up and she said, when are you going to tell your kids? And I think she could tell that I was hoping to just stick my head in the sand and avoid the whole situation. Right.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, the thing is, our kids asked us tonight if he was going to, you know, we told them the news of the diagnosis and they asked if he was going to die, and we didn't want to lie to them. So we told them the truth, and, you know, we don't know when he's going to die, but yeah, they, you know, it's terminal. And so my friend said, you need to tell your kids tonight. They need to hear this from you before they go to school tomorrow. Wow. And hear it on the playground. Because she said, you know, we had this discussion at our dinner table, and I'm sure the same conversation is happening at other dinner tables in our school community tonight. And you don't want your kids to show up tomorrow and hear from someone else that their dad's going to die. And I was like, oh my God. All right. You're right. You're right.
But at the same time, it's a lot of pressure just suddenly.
It is a lot of pressure. Yes. But see, the thing is, like, and there was no way to make it better. Right. I couldn't make the facts any better. But I could make it worse by not having them hear it from me.
Yeah.
By having them overhear it on the playground, or from having some kid, whether they just mentioned it as a fact or whether they said something dumb or whether they, I don't know what, like, all those things would be worse than hearing it from me in a supportive way, right?
For sure.
So yeah, that's one of the major things that, and then in all the interviews that I've done with experts on the podcast, that has been reinforced over and over and over again, how important it is to be honest with kids. And it oftentimes it comes up if, let's say, a parent dies by suicide and the surviving parent maybe wonders, should they tell the kids that, or should they make up a different story that sounds less bad, like they died of a heart attack or something else? And you'd be surprised how often people try to cover it up and tell the kids and others maybe that it was a heart attack. And the problem is, eventually the kids will find out the truth, whether you tell them yourself because you decide later they're old enough or something, or whether they Google it and they find out, or whether some other kid tells them on the playground, or whatever it is, they will eventually find out. And then that bond of trust with the surviving parent is damaged. And that bond of trust is so important. And so, you know, again, it's like, you can't make the fact that they died of suicide any better, but you can make it worse if you compound it with lying.
For sure. And yeah, I guess then they come with more questions as time goes on, right? And you just have to stay honest and manage their anxiety.
Well, and that's an interesting point too, right? Because you can let them lead with their questions, right? Like, you did, it's kind of like, you know, now they say, like, you know, talking about sex, like, you shouldn't just sit down and say, like, okay, now we're having a whole discussion and now we're never talking about it again, right? Like, you let their questions guide the discussion. And so a child who's younger, they might have one or two questions, you know, about the death or whatever. They might have one or two questions and then be done. And then they have another question tomorrow or next week. And then in a year, they have 10 more questions or whatever it is, right? And so it doesn't have to be like, oh, they opened the door, so let's sit down and have a whole big long discussion. But it's perfectly okay and even helpful to answer their questions and say, do you have more questions? And if they say no, that's fine. And so, I'm always here letting them know, sending that message that this topic is not off limits, that you can ask me what you want, when you want, and I will answer the best I can. Sending that message that the topic isn't off limits is very, very important.
Yes. And also probably making it like for them to work on it at their own time. And yeah. Like this way you're sure that it's age appropriate or what they're able to take on and think about, right? But sometimes when you have the whole conversation, maybe some bits are,
I don't know. Yeah, and they say if the kid is old enough to ask the question, then they're old enough for an honest answer, right? And so if you're letting the discussion be led by their questions, then you're sticking with territory that, that is appropriate to be talking about.
Good to know. Yes. Is there any last advice that you would like to share?
I would also say that it's okay not to have all the answers, right? So you're sending this message that the door is open for discussion and for questions, and they're going to come to you with questions, and you might be freaked out that you can't answer all the questions, and that's okay, right? And it's always okay to say, I don't know. And then sometimes if it's a question about facts, like how does cancer work, or what are the brain cancer survival rates or something, then you can say, I don't know, but would you like to learn more about that? Let's do some research together. Let's see if we can find out, right? So there's that kind of question. There's other questions like, maybe they're asking something about their parents' condition or whatever. And the answer is, I don't know, but we're talking to the doctor next week and we'll have more information then. And I will be sure to come right back from the appointment and let you know what we've learned, right? So there's that kind of thing. And then there's other questions like, like, why did dad have to die? Right. And there isn't really an answer to that. There's no answer. And so realizing that you don't have to necessarily be afraid of a question like that, if you realize that you can try to connect around the emotions behind the question. So like, why did dad have to die? Well, I don't know. And it sucks and it's awful. And whatever makes sense in the context, right? But I really miss him, and I can tell you do too. And trying to open that door to discussing how they're feeling about the situation. It doesn't have to be like, I can't answer why did he die, so I'm going to run away from the discussion, right? If you can figure out how to connect around the emotions that the child is expressing or thinking about, then that's really, that becomes a good discussion, because then you're being supportive, you're being open, and you're communicating. And really that's the goal.
Yeah, that's very helpful. Thank you for sharing the advice. I think it's great, because you don't want everyone to just suffer in the corner and just, be able to support each other and go through this as a family. So it's very helpful. Thank you for your expertise. We will leave all the links in the description box so that everyone at home can check your work, your podcast, and also the different groups that we talked about at the beginning. And thank you so much for everything that you do, Jenny.
Yeah, you're welcome. That sounds great. And I should say, if people want to know more about supporting their friends who are grieving, griefallies.com. I have a whole bunch of information that's free and would be helpful, I think, to them.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Jenny.
Okay, thank you, Julie.
Thank you so much for listening. Feel free to share if you think it might be helpful to someone you know. If you enjoyed this episode, then please make sure to write a review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, and subscribe if you haven't already. That's it for me. See you soon with the next episode. And in the meantime, have a lovely day.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.